we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome to our wonderful audience. That's the second time I've gotten to say that.
We're talking with a wonderful doctor already who's raised our spirits just by looking at him. Looking at him, and he smiles so beautifully, raises our spirits. Dr. Francis Christian. He is a retired surgeon and a poet. He's from Canada, that seat of totalitarianism in just above the United States, which we are beginning to approach in equal totalitarianism. He was a trauma surgeon, which is, I think, probably one of the most stressful things in the world, and also a thyroid surgeon and a general surgeon. But what is most remarkable is he was director of the Surgical Humanities Department, as well as of Quality Improvement and Patient Safety. And he's been editor-in-chief, founding editor of the Surgical Humanities. So we're going to have a lot to talk about. And my understanding is that he's one of the early martyrs in terms of standing up on issues and losing his connections, his lifelong connections. I'm just delighted to be introducing Dr. Francis Christian. And Dr. Christian, do you have anything you want to add to that brief description? And or maybe tell us about what we just began to talk about between us, among us, which was just what you've been through in the early years.
Well, thanks very much, Peter and Ginger. It's a great honor for me to meet you both. I have the greatest regard for the work you've done, not just in COVID, but the long history of standing up for humanity, for standing up for people in terrible need, the psychological work you've done against the psychosurgery cartel and so on. So it's an enormous privilege and pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you very much. And my partner for 40 years in this work has been Ginger. And lobotomy I took on without Ginger in the 70s. We've been together now 40 years and done all kinds of reform work together. So I want to make sure she's included in that. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're certainly one of my big heroes, sir. And it's a great honor to be on your show. As you said, I was professor of surgery in the University of Saskatchewan in Western Canada. In addition to being a professor of surgery, I was director of the Surgical Humanities Program and founding editor of the Journal of the Surgical Humanities. And I also was the director of patient safety and quality improvement. When the COVID pandemic or the manufactured pandemic started, I was actually initially in 2020, when the whole show started, I was, in fact, a little bit sympathetic to the official narrative. But very soon, I decided that there was so much similarity with what was going on and with what I had known about the totalitarian Soviet system, because that's something I've been reading about and informing myself about since I was a teenager. I'd read a very influential book. It's called Tortured for Christ by Richard Wurmbrand. And I realized that many of the things that were being brought out actually were a copy book of exact copy of what happened in the Soviet Union, the takeover of the media, becoming an arm of government, these words, disinformation and misinformation, which were actually invented by the Stalin regime, and so on. So, and then the big thing was when people whose work, whose medical work I had known about, people like Pierre Corey and Peter McKellar, even before the COVID pandemic, they were being censored too. And then I started looking at the data, and none of it made sense, and none of it matched the COVID narrative. And that's when I started speaking out to my colleagues. I mean, we, as you know, Peter, as a physician, we surgeons, before we actually start the surgery, there's some talk and banter in the operating room. We speak to the anesthesiologists, the nurses, my residents, medical students, and then we start the surgery. And during that time, I would talk to my colleagues, especially the anesthesiologists, about the data not making sense, and about how, in fact, we ought not to be locking down. We ought not to be doing all the things which the propaganda media was asking us to do. I did not make much headway. In fact, residents were, and medical students and some nurses were more receptive than my anesthesiology and intensive care colleagues. And then the vaccine rolled out at the end of 2020. Now, in Canada, they started authorizing the COVID vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine, to children in early 2021. And at that time, I thought to myself, you know, with adults, you can plead with them, cajole with them, you can try and change their mind, but ultimately they have to make up their own minds. But children have no voice, and we have to be their voice, and they are our future. So what I and another physician here, who is a family doctor, decided to do is to call a press conference. We were actually very surprised that the press actually paid attention. CTV, which is a big Canadian network, and Global News, which is also a big Canadian network, were there. And there was some other news organizations there as well. And in that press conference, and I can probably send you the statement that I read at the press conference, and you can probably include that in your Substack.
We'd love to have that. Go ahead.
So in that press conference, I talked about how I was not representing the university, which had a different stand anyway. I was not representing the government. I was there as a father, and recently and joyfully a grandfather, and somebody who is concerned about his fellow human beings. And I talked about how this was a new technology. I talked about how in Canada, you know, in the US, you have emergency use authorization, and the same thing is called interim use authorization in Canada. And I pointed out how we don't know about this vaccine. It's a new vaccine. It has not been tried in clinical trials before. It should not be given to children, because children have a lower risk of dying of COVID than of dying of a car accident. And I made several such points. I pointed out the early myocarditis data that was beginning to be known around the world. It was first, I think, pointed out in Israel and then in some other parts of the world. But that data was actually already published. And I said, you know, the wares vaccine adverse event reporting system in the United States is already recording thousands of complications from this vaccine in adults and in children. And we should not be giving this to our children without informed consent. And I said informed consent is the bedrock, has been the bedrock of medical science for hundreds of years. And we should not be giving this without proper informed consent. Because at that time, the government of Saskatchewan here had authorized the vaccine even without the parents knowing about it. So the child could in the high school say, yes, you know, you can give it to me, and he or she doesn't know what is going in and what is going to do to them for the next several decades. So that was actually, if you read my statement, I don't think it is controversial at all, because the idea of informed consent is an old idea. It's not a new idea. And all I was asking for is informed consent. I was, shortly afterwards, I was called into a meeting in which I was fired from my contract. And well, the recording of that meeting actually was also taken up by my lawyers and then put on the internet. And then I started getting messages from Canada and the United States and all over the world, because the fact is that that tribunal which fired me, even from the point of view of basic fairness, I don't think they exhibited any of that fairness or decency that you would do. But in addition, what I recognized was that this was part of the totalitarian narrative, which included propaganda media, control of the media, a global elite, a corporate elite, basically running the show. And so now I don't practice surgery. I'm busy in a whole lot of other things. If you wish, I can talk a little bit about that. I teach biology and English literature to a high school homeschool pod. And we have about 35 students in that pod, and I write and do things like that. But I took, because of this firing and making it impossible for me to work in an academic environment, and indeed making it impossible for me to work as a surgeon, I retired from surgery, and I'm busy with a whole lot of other things now.
Oh boy, that's medicine's loss and humanity's loss that you've experienced this. You know, it occurred to me while you were telling your story that I've been aware for some time that this purging that occurred in medicine with the COVID excuse, it was a purging of those who were critical thinkers, who were thinking for themselves, and who would be brave enough to then speak their truth, their minds, in regards to what they were observing. But as you were talking, I also realized that this whole movement and this purging of medicine and academia, it was purging the heart out of medicine as well, really. I mean, if anything, you represent so much heart, Dr. Christian, in addition to your critical thinking. So it's a great loss.
You know, Ginger, that's a very insightful comment, because for us who have been trained in the methods of science, the methods of science, inquiry, scientific inquiry, going after the truth, that had a certain romance by itself. I mean, what you call the art of the scientific process, and in my case, the art of being a surgeon. And that, and for us scientists, and I know Peter McCullough, with whom I have had a few conversations, he feels the same way, because as a top scientist and somebody who has been engaged with the processes of science, scientific inquiry, which has been bequeathed to us by the Western world, it came as a big shock and really a huge tragedy that this whole beautiful quest for science has been sort of hijacked, taken over, destroyed, and essentially morphed into some sort of Frankenstein monster of totalitarian control. I honestly don't know how the West will recover from this, because it has gone so far and it has gotten so serious, not just in medicine, but in multiple other fields too, that the whole scientific process, that which has made the modern world itself, is under threat.
Yes, I see that. I'm often thinking of those early, what I think of as prototypes for what we experienced in 2020, those earlier experiments or attempts at control in various fields or subfields. And I think one of them is the field that my husband is in with psychiatry, because there's the whole process of requiring, not medical students, it's residents, right, Peter? Requiring residents to do electroshock therapy. Yeah. And if they refuse, they're fired and not allowed to complete their studies, which is amazing. I mean, you can't on any kind of moral principle excuse yourself from that. And I think that there are other places. This is, I believe, also in regards to science, that the whole aspect of climate control probably was an early prototype also of manipulating science for political purposes.
Yes, I think it's all related, Ginger. I think the fact that the global elite and the corporate elite want to essentially control the agenda of what the people are allowed to believe, and control the agenda of such basic things as what is science. I mean,
we need to break right now. We've run
yes,
over
of course.
A little because you're so interesting, and interrupting you seems sacrilegious. But we'll go to break.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines, so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
This is Peter Breggin, Dr. Breggin, and Ginger Breggin on America Out Loud, returning to this amazing conversation with Francis Christian. And Ginger has been talking with him about the issues of the heart, and then brought up the issues of psychiatry as an early, really totalitarian wedge. And Ginger started talking with me about the larger implications of some of what I was doing quite early on. I do think that psychiatry is it's fake medicine and the cutting edge of totalitarianism within the entire medical field. But it's been more than that. Psychiatry led the way to the Holocaust and in Nazi Germany. I've got a scientific article on my website, Psychiatric Holocaust, about that. Because it too, it lacks heart. It lacks any kind of real ability to really connect with people or with any spiritual quality in people, and instead tries to control people. Could you say a few words about your surgical humanities interest? Because it just sounds so interesting to me and relevant.
I'll be happy to.
And this is Dr. Francis Christian, if I didn't mention his name again.
I'll be happy to, Peter. So I'm a published poet. My book of poems is called To a Nurse Friend Weeping, and it was published by Hop Press in Eastern Canada in 2021. And I had a previous book of published poetry as well. And I've been writing poetry since I was really 11 years old.
Wow.
the surgical humanities department was something that I co-founded with the then head of surgery, Ivar Mendez, who I must give him credit for actually being open to this idea. And essentially what I was trying to do is get residents, medical students, nurses, colleagues, surgeons, to engage with the humanities, with art, music, poetry, drama, medical history, and so on, because of several reasons. Engaging with the humanities by itself cannot make you a good surgeon or a good doctor. After all, we know that the Nazi secret police were torturing prisoners while, upstairs there was Beethoven being played on, to the soldiers. So by itself, it cannot. I don't believe the humanities necessarily can make you a better physician. But without the humanities, you cannot be the kind of physician we would want to go to. So what we did is we started a medical humanities reading program. Every couple of weeks we would meet. There were no hierarchies. I mean, residents, medical students, nurses, we would all call each other by name, first name. No hierarchies, and we would read poetry drama or medical history together and discuss various things about the world, about beauty, about truth, and we would order some pizza, and that was a pizza surgical humanities evening. The other thing I did was, what happens is, and it's the same, I think, in America, Peter, that we have a lot of talented, say, pianists who then come into medicine, they get immersed in medical studies, and then they forget about their enormous talent in piano playing or violin or the cello and so on. So I did is bring together those kind of musicians, and we had an orchestra which was composed of physicians, surgeons, medical students, nurses, and there was one professional musician who also joined. We would have a surgical humanities day where there would be an art exhibition where talented artists who were nurses, medical students, residents, surgeons, and so on would bring in their artwork. The exhibition was on the first floor of the medical school here. And then the evening, we would have an evening of fine music. And the orchestra was by medical people, and so that was a couple of things we did. I also co-founded and was the editor in chief of the Journal of the Surgical Humanities, and I think there are links to that journal on the internet, and I can send you those as well.
That still exists.
Essentially.
Does that still exist, Dr. Christian, the Surgical Humanities Journal?
Well, after I was fired, unfortunately, the journal also had its own demise.
Yeah. So that's what I feared. I'm really glad to give you an opportunity to talk about this because it's very beautiful, and it's also, it just shows the darkness that's going on in the world.
Yes.
It's like Middle Ages are descending, but worse. I mean, modern totalitarianism is far worse than the Middle Ages or anything we have ever seen before.
Well, there's no excuse for ignorance.
Yeah, there's so many avenues to truth now. That's an interesting.
The idea of the humanities program, the surgical humanities program, was. You cannot treat the human being without knowing the human story. And so in order to know the human story, you have to engage with the humanities. And so that was the, in a word, that was the philosophy behind the surgical
humanities
program.
Yeah, it's the opposite of what's going on because, folks, as anybody listening here knows, it's just a very active destruction of the human being going on.
Yes.
You know, from surgically mutilating children who get confused about their sexual identity to, just crushing freedom of speech and so on in the U.S. and in Canada.
And causing damage to the very DNA that makes up the physicality of a human being.
And that's done with the vaccines, and it's also done with COVID. And both of them have the capacity to use the transferase and have the actual nucleus of your eggs or your sperm transformed by these assaults on humanity. Wow. Where should we go from here in our own discussion? You're still active in the world.
Very much so, yes.
And I think that that's really important. You also do not look in any way crushed. You look like a very vital man. Maybe we could move into a little bit of conversation, which I think people are grateful for, about how do we survive? And how have you survived in this period of time? And what is your life like?
You alluded to, Ginger, of the destruction of the human being. And when we speak I'm a Christian myself, but all religions speak of the essential self, which is the soul. Every religion actually has this idea that we are actually much more than molecules and atoms and the physical being. And I'm sure that is one of the driving forces for all those who strive to make a better world, because like Peter did with his battle against psychosurgery and so on. So I think the goal of the corporate elite, the globalists, is to destroy the soul of man, and to destroy that search for God. And I think that is really the key. I don't like the political process. I don't think we should put our faith in the political process, because the institutions are now corrupt on both sides, on all sides. Mm-hmm. The new Kennedy, RFK Jr., came in like a breath of fresh air, and those of us who remember the kind of idealism, the American idealism that the world once looked up to, with his uncle and with his dad, think that he is probably the best bet for America, but on the other hand, he has to come up against a very corrupt system, and I don't know whether he will be able to reform it. So there is a verse in scripture, in the Bible. The prophet Jeremiah says in Jeremiah, "The heart is desperately wicked above all things. Who can know it?" And I believe that that is the key to the survival of humanity. We need somebody to change the heart. For me, that has been done through the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, and Him giving me a new heart and a new life. But that is the key to the survival, I believe, of our race, because without acknowledgement that man is spirit and soul and not just tissues and ligaments and joints, and as the globalists want, they want to reprogram the brain even. Man is not that. Man is the essential self, is the soul. And that is why I believe that Jesus talks about eternal life, because that eternal life is important to me, because I want to know that that essential self that loves my wife dearly will survive and will last forever. And that's just one example. But the beautiful things which do not die, which cannot die, which belong to the realm of the soul, of the spirit of man, that is what the globalists are trying to destroy. And I think that in recognizing that, and in fact going the opposite direction and embracing that quest for meaning and purpose and God and life eternal, in that lies the salvation of mankind.
I totally agree. Any kind of, well, actually, we have a dear friend who years and years, I think it was probably 2008 or so, mentioned to us at one point that if the country was going to be fixed and if the world was going to be fixed, it wouldn't be through politics. It would be through the faiths of the world. It would be through those very deep and sincere faiths that peoples hold for God from their own arenas and their own belief systems And I've thought about that comment again and again since 2020, when we started investigating the whole COVID episode and realizing exactly what degree of evil it represented. And we've been looking at forms of evil for a long, long time. My husband has for over 60 years. And even we who have had that kind of practice, if you will, were stunned by what we were discovering in terms of the degree of pre-planning, the degree of effort, and the degree of conspiracy that was put together and ascended within the control arenas of the world. So ascended in media, in politics, in all of the sort of sub nodes, if you will, that manage the world on a day-to-day basis. And it was terrifying at times. And at those times, all I could do was remember God and turn to God, because there wasn't any other place to go from the terror that overcame me a few times as we were looking at these. It was quite remarkable. I had never had an experience like that that was quite as raw.
The friend she's mentioning is Jewish, and I'm Jewish, and Ginger is Christian. And what he was actually specifically saying was that a Christian revolution was going to be necessary. As a Jew, he's, like me, dismayed at the lack of activism for freedom within the Jewish community. But and it was a very big part of the American Revolution was a resurgence of Christianity in America. And it was very Bible-based in their thinking, and including the Hebrew Bible and Exodus was a very, very big deal to the American founders. Well, we've only got a few seconds left, and I think that we can just take a deep breath at this point, and we'll be back in a few minutes for the final segment.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Welcome back to America Out Loud with Peter Bregan and Ginger Bregan. We love the opportunity to talk to our wonderful, wonderful audience. And one of the things that Ginger and I have found incredibly sustaining while we've been taking on all of this evil is meeting people like our guest, Francis Christian.
Dr. Francis Christian.
Surgeon, poet, and in the background over his right shoulder, because this is radio, but we do have a video, thank God, and is his guitar. I presume it's your guitar.
Yes, it is, yes.
I don't remember seeing one of those in the background recently in our various shows. But meeting people like you, not that there's anyone like you or like me or like Ginger, but people who really share the spiritual concern and who tie God in with human freedom and tie God in with the essential purity of the human soul to be able to see that there's something so good inside of us that fights also the evil that's in us and in the world and everywhere around us. But that we do have an identity that we can love and respect and see it's equal in every other human being. That this is not something Peter has or Francis Christian has or Ginger has. This is life. This essence of life, and it's universal, and it's one of the first things that totalitarianism stamps out and really stamps out. In China, they have an official religion. They made it official. It's atheism. And that's really real, this opposition between believing in something greater than ourselves, that is in ourselves. I love the concept of that of God, that we see that of God in each other, which is a Quaker concept. And if we see that of God within others as well as ourselves, you know, you start to then question abortion, you start to question lobotomy as I did, you start to question anything that interferes with that life and with the expression of that life.
And I think part of that is the distancing of people from each other that totalitarianism implements or encourages or orders, the masking, the 6-foot distance, the never shake hands again, a thousands of years old tradition. And we were supposed to just abandon that when that was one of the most ancient ways that human beings would let each other know that they could connect, they could begin to trust each other, they could find commonality with each other. So I think that the individuality of human beings is one of the first things that's stolen after fundamental spirituality.
Yes.
Yes, I would completely agree. And it was completely criminal. And there was no science supporting the isolation of our children. Telling children that you can't touch each other, hug each other, date each other, and you cannot, be with other children was actually one of the big crimes of COVID. And you were talking about how if you're Jewish, then you said that you were disappointed at the way the Jewish community didn't come together against this tyranny. And I, as a Christian, I'm very disappointed too at the way Christian leaders have actually dropped the ball completely. They've all become part of the totalitarian system, not all. And that's the wonderful thing about this whole experience, because it has been a sort of a winnowing time. There's been a winnowing of truth. And we now know who the false prophets really are. But in every group, whether it was Muslims or Hindus or Jewish people, there were heroes. And Peter, you would be one of the heroes of the movement for your community. And there this gentleman who this physician who I think passed away a few years ago,
Zev Zelenko, dear friends of
Oh, right, ours, right. Zev Zelenko, and so on.
Vladimir Zev Zelenko.
And so I think there have been shining lights in every community who God has put forward, and it has brought us together. That's a wonderful thing too. We all need more of that. We need, you know, Christians and Jews and Muslims to come together in this fight for freedom. And COVID has done that. There's a verse in the epistle of Paul to the Romans where it says, where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. And I believe that that epitomizes and captures completely what has happened during COVID. The other side, the forces of evil, wanted to completely demolish us, and instead, we are winning.
Tell me about how we're winning. Tell us all more about how we're winning.
Well, I think
you're saying spiritually, but I think you mean even more than that. Do you think there is a chance of our winning?
I do.
Into a doubt more and more now.
You know, I'm an eternal optimist, and so I and I'm sure you are too, Peter. Because
we are.
Because you know, just looking at your relentless struggle on behalf of humanity, on behalf of injured psychiatric patients, and your relentless struggle against the lobotomy complex and all those things. I know quite a lot about that. And I know that you have literally saved millions of lives by that. And so for me, that kind of optimism is essential. It's also the reality, because one of the things which now we are in the Lenten season, and we are in going up to Good Friday, and so we come to the point where Jesus turns the worst possible thing that could happen to him, that is the cross, into the best possible thing that could happen for mankind, that is the resurrection. So I believe that we can not just bear suffering, but we can use suffering to further the purposes of the kingdom of God, which is what you're doing, and which is what I'm trying to do. So I think we're winning because, you know, just think about this, because actually, to be honest with you, I myself, several years ago, and that is just before COVID, I didn't know who Klaus Schwab was. I knew about this World Economic Forum and, you know, this Davos elite and so on, but I didn't know who, you know, what their agenda was. In the same way, I didn't know who, you know, these global corporate. I mean, I knew who they were, but I didn't know what game they were up to. And it has woken a lot of people up. You know, nobody expected Elon Musk to buy Twitter, but he did, and so it has become not, you know, the bastion of free speech or anything, but one of the foundations of American life, that is free speech. Is showing something of a resurgence. And in Canada, you were talking about how everything was shutting down and evil was staring us in the face, Ginger. And in Canada, it was probably much worse, except for some states like California, I guess. But in Canada, they were even talking in terms of a quarantine camp. And then the truckers came. So God works in unexpected ways, and I think if we leave ourselves in his hands and if we go on with the work of fighting for freedom, we cannot lose.
Somewhere I believe that, and it's always a struggle. And we revive each other, Ginger and I, and people like yourself, and very rare people like yourself, revive us as well. In a way, this is a revival show today, and maybe we're always trying to do revivals.
I think so. I think really we're working on...
You're inspiring us to rethink our purpose here.
Well,
we have to
constantly renew our sense of connectedness with both God and with each other, because there's a relentless attempt to disappear that, like people used to be disappeared down in Chile during the oppression down there, and there's that attempt by evil to simply overcome and disappear God and everything that's good. And that, I think that's the struggle. The Bible says that's, or well, actually it's the Catholic Catechism that says that we're placed here in this world to constantly make decisions about whether we are going to choose good or evil. And even the little choices in life are decisions to do one thing or another. And one of the things that I found profound about that is that we have to continue to, as long as we choose the good that are the little choices, the bigger choices become easier. In other words, it's like driving on a road and a road gets rutted, so it becomes easier and easier to stay on that path. So you just pick up that mantle of faith and goodness and more morality and start using it every single day. And I think that makes a huge difference.
I think it actually smooths the ruts out, for an improvement on your metaphor.
Think about those roads in England, you know, that are 3 feet deeper than the berms on either side. And you can't get off that road once you've
That's
been
true.
On it for a while.
That was your metaphor.
That's my metaphor.
Very good one, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, you get yourself even protected by the walls.
Yes, that's right.
It's true.
We have 4 minutes left of a really inspiring meeting together. I'm so glad. Thank you for the appreciation you're showing to our work. That moves me deeply, and I thank you very much. Thank you much for that. I didn't accept, or even I almost shied away from any kind of appreciation like that until I got much older now, and I'm letting myself have that appreciation, and I thank you very much for it.
I think, Peter, this is important. When you're in the middle of a battle, when you're in the middle of trying to change something and fix it, one's personal efforts never feel like they're enough. And it is often only in hindsight that you realize how much you accomplished. And so I think that that's important for all of us to remember as we move forward to oppose this totalitarianism and return to individual liberty and freedom.
Well, and that brings me to another nuance that I'd like to share again, which is that, to me, the one place we can be the most sure of our accomplishments is in loving the people around us. And the love that you and I share seems to inspire people. And I think that the love that we have for the people we're closest to, and even this little Yorkie who loves you so much, Yorkie who loves you so much, and we both love her, that one of the deepest satisfactions throughout all of the travail that human beings can have, in addition to their relationship to God, a loving God, is our relationship to one another. And I think often about Jesus being asked about what were, you know, the most important things in the world or in life or in teachings. And he said, to love one another as I love you, to love God and to love one another as I love you. And I think that lovingness that you generate, you're an obvious source of love on this planet, and it's what we aspire to be as much as we can within our own power. And when you get in touch with that as one of your purposes, your life just gets better. Everything gets better. When you get ready to be cross with yourself or cross with your wife or your husband or your dog.
Or the dog.
And your dog, and you remember, no, I'm the source of love. That is my power. That is my strength. It transforms all relationship and all inner experience. And you inspired me to talk about that today. I want to give you the last minute and a half, Dr. Francis Christian. First, how do people most easily get in touch with you, or at least go to you?
I'm on Substack, and my Substack address is quite simple. It's Francis Christian, FrancisChristian.substack.com. And so you can look at my work there. My book of poems is called To a Nurse Friend Weeping. It's available on Amazon, and it's available also through my publisher, which is Harp Press, H-A-R-P, Harp Press. And if you Google Harp Press and then Francis Christian, you will find my book. I've been in utter awe these last few minutes, because it's been such a privilege and honor to meet with you, Dr. Breggin. Your great work for humanity, for mankind, your pioneering work in psychiatry and in exposing the COVID tyranny. For me, as I said earlier in this delightful interview, it all comes down to the heart of man, which is desperately wicked above all things. The soul of man, the heart of man, the essential me. And once we know that that heart of man, which is desperately wicked, can be changed. And for me, Jesus has brought new life and a new meaning and purpose in my life, and has changed that heart. And I believe that that is the best recipe for mankind. Keep pursuing truth, keep pursuing freedom. It doesn't matter what your background is, or you know, in what type of culture you've been brought up in. That pursuit for truth is universal. It is there in all religions. And I believe that, as you said, Peter, that love for one another is a key. Is very, very fundamental to the to our continued existence.
Thank you, Dr. Francis Christian. This has been a marvelous hour, shared hour with us.